Tuned into Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Joining me, as always, is my loyal and faithful co-host, Steve Smee.
Hey, what's up, guys? We are in the thick of July. Hope you're enjoying
July 12th. July 12th, almost the middle of July. Also joining us today, we got Matt, also known as the Masonic Bodybuilder. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you guys?
We're doing well. How's your kid doing? You couldn't join us the last episode because your kid wasn't feeling too hot.
Yeah, it's funny. He's had a little bit of a fever, but he's coming off of seizure medication. He's been on for 4 years. So they're thinking he outgrew it. So he's having a bit of side effect, but he's doing well.
That's really good. Yeah, I remember you mentioning that. That's really good to hear that he's back healthy. I hope. Yeah. You know, he stays that way.
So we got some great listener questions. I'll start it off. I'll give you basically the first one. Hey, Trev and Steve, I was wondering what's something you've learned this past year when it comes to training, diet, or supplementation? So I'll basically go with what I learned first. I've been doing a little bit different of a diet approach this year. You know, I've always been a high carb, high protein, low fat guy. And I still am, you know, high protein, high carb. But I've really upped my fats this year. You know, I've really increased my avocado intake, lots of wild salmon, lots of almonds. I've been eating a lot of goat cheese that's grass-fed. I get that at the farmer's market. I've noticed that my joints feel a lot better. My pumps are way better. I've really learned, you know, a lot of these good guests we've had on, you know, Dave Palumbo especially, talking about the importance of, you know, fatty acids. And it really, it's something I basically said, hey, you know, I'm going to give this a try, see how it works for my body. And, you know, it's really worked. I've always kind of worried that, you know, the more fat you eat, you know, the more fat you'll store. But I guess that's obviously not true. And, you know, I guess you can teach an old dog new tricks. So I still am a high protein, high carb guy. But, you know, I'm eating a lot more fat than I would, you know, before my fats would be pretty minimal. Like I'd only really eat you know, some fish oil caps, maybe a whole egg or two. And that was about it. You know, my fat wasn't very high. You know, it was maybe 30, 40 grams a day. And now I'm up, you know, maybe 60, 70, 80. And just overall, I feel way better. My performance in the gym's way better. My recovery's way better. And it hasn't affected, you know, fat gain or fat loss or anything like that. So that's what I've learned. Steve, we'll let you go. And then Matt, you can chime in on one thing you've learned this year.
Okay, I'll go next then. We had, you know, these podcasts have been quite an experience. We've had different guests. A lot of people have had different diet ideas and stuff. I've always, in the past, you know, been focused on strength, on mass, wanting to get bigger, because I grew up, you know, the skinny kid. So when you grow up the skinny kid, you want to be big as an adult. You know, just like how growing up as a fat kid, you probably want to be skinny as an adult. So in my case, you know, I've always, you know, had that attitude where, oh, you got to eat every 2 hours. You got to, you know, get in tons of food. You got to eat 8 meals a day. You got to eat 6 meals a day. All this shit that I've, you know, pretty much it's been drilled in my head. And that's what I followed. And it's allowed me to get strong, you know, strong as fuck in the gym. But what I've learned really in the past year or two is that, you know, it's not just about, you know, eating all this fucking food and just getting strong and trying to get big muscle mass. But what I've learned is, you know, being healthy is the number one thing. Because in the end, you know, do you sleep better? Do you feel tired during the day? Do you, you know, like the way you look in the mirror? Do you look trim? Do you look lean? You know, those, you know, that's been my attitude. So I've totally changed the way I approach food now. Instead of always trying to eat and always trying to, you know, feel full all the time. Like if I was hungry, I would eat food. A year or two ago, that would have been my mentality. Now when I feel hungry, fuck it. I don't care. I just feel hungry. I don't feel like I have to run to the kitchen or run to a restaurant every time I get hungry. And then also, like, you know, going to the gym, I've always had the attitude, I've always preached, oh, you need lots of carbs. You know, you need to get in a lot of carbs so you have energy for the gym. Now I don't give a fuck. I just go into the gym whether I ate a meal or not. It doesn't matter to me now. So I've totally switched the way I approach, you know, hunger now. It's not just about always feeling full. I'm not scared to feel hungry. But you got to keep in mind, too, I put on so much muscle mass and strength over the past 15 years that I have that ability to kind of not worry about losing some strength and losing some mass, because now I can just lean up. And to be honest with you, I look way better, you know, being leaner now. I'm 20 pounds less than I was a year ago, but I feel so much better. And you couldn't even notice if you looked at me with no shirt on. My muscles look bigger now. So, you know, that's been the big thing that I've changed. And if you'd have told me this a year ago, I would have laughed in your face and called you an idiot. So that's yeah. It's been a big change for me.
You're really going to love the guest we have coming on Thursday. Coach Scott Abel. He's a big, big name here in Canada. He's written tons of books. He's a big mentor of mine. And one thing he always talks about is the difference between controllable hunger and uncontrollable. And that's exactly what you're saying, you know, is like, let's say you've gone about 3 hours since your last meal. You're hungry, but it's a controllable hunger. You know, it's not something you need to be scared of. And actually, controllable hunger is a sign of health. You know, it's a sign that your metabolism is working. And, you know, I always tell my clients, you know, if they're on a diet and on a weight loss diet and they're like, I'm hungry, I'm like, that's good. You know, that means that you're burning body fat, you know. But now you don't want to get ravenous. That's when the problem starts. So it's really learning that, you know, being a little bit hungry, that's healthy, you know, and it's not going to hurt you. You know, being hungry for an hour isn't going to harm you, right? But what the food companies try to do is they try to say, hey, you're hungry, you need a snack, you know, you need this Snickers bar, you need this Quaker oatmeal to go bar or whatever. It's all just marketing, you know.
No, they market on TV all the time. Every other commercial is food. So when you're watching TV, they try to make you hungry, and then that makes you run out and get food or order food and stuff. So they're brilliant at that. But the food industry is so big, they need you to continue to eat. So that's, you know, that's been a big change definitely with me. But I'm not scared anymore to be hungry, and I'm not scared that my muscles are going to go boof and disappear. You know, that's, you know, so I'm not scared anymore. So bring it on.
Matt, what's one thing you've learned?
Well, I just want to say something quick first. The food industry is extremely powerful. I recently watched a video on Netflix about food and eating healthy, and they were trying to get interviews with a lot of the different organizations, such as the World Health Organization, the American Cancer Society. And as soon as they brought up the fact that the food companies fund them and fund a lot of the research, they declined all the interviews. So these food companies are extremely powerful, as Steve mentioned. The commercials, they're there for a reason. They're right up there with the big pharmaceutical companies as far as the pull they have. But what I've noticed the last year that's changed quite a bit is I've really realized that in the sport of fitness and bodybuilding and health, you really do get better with age. There's a reason why some of these guys peak when they're 35, because you learn so much along the way. It's not like professional athletes where they peak, say, you know, 21 to 28, right, are the prime years. I'm finding now I'm able to have better results. I'm able to make changes that are more impactful and just see so much better as I get older, just based on what I've learned. So it's something when guys tell you on these forums and everything, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? Typical cliche. It's so true. So you guys need to use patience and keep learning. And if you don't want to listen to other people, listen to your body, because you can learn a ton from what you're putting into it and how you're training. And just paying attention to how you react, you can really make positive changes. And as you get older, yeah, it gets harder. You know, metabolism slows down. but it gets easier in a sense too, because you know more of how you're going to respond to very individual things. So I think that's kind of what I've learned.
All right, Matt, thanks for your input. We're having a little bit of a hard time hearing you, so please speak up a bit. So our second question, it comes from a female listener. Hey, Trev, Steve, and Matt, love the show. Quick question for you. I'm about to start a cycle of Anavar. I was wondering, will my birth control still be effective while using anabolic steroids? Thanks for your help. So this is a really good question. And the truth of the matter is, this is a question that no one really has an answer to because it's not something that has been studied in depth. I can tell you, scientifically speaking, your birth control should still be effective while you're using, you know, any sort of steroid, whether it be Anavar or Primo or whatever you're using. But it hasn't been studied in depth. You know, it might not work. It's hard to say. So my advice would be, you know, keep taking the birth control, but I would, you know, stack two forms of birth control together. So, you know, have him wear a condom and, you know, have, and use your birth control. But yeah, Steve, what are your thoughts on this? You're the guru when it comes to all this sort of stuff.
Listen, there's a difference between steroids, okay? This is what women get confused about. You have catabolic steroids, you have anabolic steroids. Something like prednisone, stuff like that, those are catabolic steroids. So a lot of women get confused on that when they talk to their doctors. They might be like, oh, I'm taking steroids, will affect my birth control. And the doctor gets confused. The doctor thinks you're talking about prednisone. They think you're talking about catabolic steroids. So you really need to talk to your doctor about this. And, you know, talk to a doctor that actually knows what the fuck they're talking about, because most doctors out there have no fucking clue about anabolic steroids because they don't study anabolic steroids in college. They don't have any experience with them. Okay. So you really need to find a doctor who's going to be able to give you the proper advice. You need to make it clear to them you're taking anabolic steroids, not catabolic steroids. So once you sit down with your doctor and discuss that, it should be fine. As far as birth control, I don't see any reason why taking anabolic steroids would interfere with your birth control. They're not the same thing, okay? Birth control are hormones, but they have nothing to do with anabolic steroids. They don't have nothing to do with, you know, each other. So I don't see it being an issue at all. You know, we get that question a lot with men. Do anabolic steroids prevent pregnancy when men take it? You know, and we know that it does reduce the chances with men of getting a woman pregnant. So on the woman's side, if you are looking to have a baby, you should come off all hormones, birth control, and anabolic steroids, so you can, you know, have your fertility be peak performance in that aspect. So, but in terms of, you know, are you gonna get pregnant easier when you're on steroids? Maybe that comes from the fact that women who use anabolic steroids are more horny and they do fuck around a lot more than normal women. I don't know. So there's got to be some basis for that, but that's my theory, because every woman I know who's on anabolic steroids is horny as fuck. She wants to have sex like 2-3 times a day. So that's probably where it comes from more.
I'm going to say one thing quick, then we'll let Matt chime in. So in terms of men and fertility when taking steroids, so when you take steroids, it basically suppresses your natural testosterone production, and as a result, your sperm production is, you know, reduced or even shut down from that. Now, taking steroids does not guarantee that, you know, you're basically going to become infertile while you're on the steroids. You can still get a female pregnant while on steroids. So if you're a guy taking steroids, still wear a condom or still make sure she's wearing birth control or whatever, because, you know, it doesn't guarantee that. You don't have this like free pass. Hey, you know, I'm using tests. I can basically screw as many chicks as I want. I don't need to wear a condom. No, you can still get a woman pregnant. It only takes one sperm. You know, it's really unlikely that you're going to get, you know, your girlfriend, wife, or whatever pregnant while using steroids, but it does happen. So still practice safe sex. Matt, what are your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I'm going to say when you're messing with hormones, always be safe, because you don't know. Personally, I have a friend that is a competitive bodybuilder. He's won shows and he has two kids that were both conceived while he was on a cycle. So it definitely happens. If it's something you don't want, then yes, be extra careful. If it's something you do want, then the same way, be extra careful, come off of everything. Whether you're on a cycle, whether you're just on TRT, you want to come off of everything if you want to conceive. So it's kind of the two opposite ends of it, but always err on the side of caution, because, you know, think about how shitty you'd feel if you didn't want a kid and you thought, oh, you know, this is going to be enough. And then, you know what happened. So always just be careful, guys. It's that simple. Always be safe.
All right. We'll move on to our third topic. Hey, Evolutionary Radio. I'm halfway through my summer cut and I'm really struggling with hunger. I was wondering if you have any tips for low-calorie snacks or anything to deal with hunger. Okay, so I'll probably have the most suggestions as I'm the competitor of this group, and I've been through this. I've been through the rodeo many times. A couple things that I found really help. Carbonated beverages really, really help. Basically, they fill up your stomach. So, you know, I drank a lot of Perrier, club soda, even diet soda. You know, it's not the best for you, but now a little bit here and there is fine. That'll really, really help. Hot drinks, for whatever reason, seem to really cut your appetite. If you're hungry and you drink a cup of decaf coffee or a cup of green tea, your appetite just goes away. One of the best pieces of advice I can give you is when you do get to eat, mindfully eat. You know, as a society, one of the biggest problems we make is that when we're eating, we're on the computer, we're watching TV, something like that, and you don't really register the fact that you ate anything because, you know, you're distracted. You know, you're basically watching that TV show. You're, you know, on Facebook or whatever. So when I pre-contest diet, I basically sit and I eat, and that's all I do. Like, I'm literally at the table. I'm not listening to anything. My phone's off. I'm not on Facebook, and I literally just eat. And when you sit and do nothing but eat for 10 minutes, you really register how much you ate. And it's actually kind of boring. You kind of realize, like, hey, I'm not as hungry as I thought I was, because, you know, a lot of times we're just snacking just mindlessly. So that's the best advice I can give you is, you know, on your next meal, turn off your phone, turn off your Facebook, and do nothing but eat. And you'll realize you're not as hungry as you thought you were, and you'll probably not even finish your entire portion. So those are three tips. We'll let Steve go and then let Matt go.
All right, I'll go on this. I did a five-day fast a few months ago. We talked about it on our prior podcast. And I also fast once a week for 24 hours, for about 20 to 24 hours straight. I do a fast, usually like on a Saturday or a Sunday. So I have really a lot of experience with this. What Trevor said is absolutely right. When you're sitting in front of your TV, you're going to feel hungry. There's just, you know, this is a fact, okay? There's something about just your mind losing itself when you're watching TV that makes you want to eat. So the thing is, what I do when I'm doing my fast is I stay as busy as I can, and that prevents my hunger. I go run errands. When I was doing my five-day fast, that's what I would do. Either if I'm not working, I'm running errands, I'm doing something to get my mind off of feeling hungry. Because when your mind plays tricks on you, your mind is trying to trick you into getting food because it's addicted to the sugar, it's addicted to the caffeine, it's addicted to, you know, the oils, the butters, all that crap. So it's trying to get you on it. And that's what restaurants do. Restaurants are very smart. They put the oil and butter in their food to get you addicted. A lot of people are addicted to Chick-fil-A because Chick-fil-A uses oil in their food. They're very smart. They're very clever about that. So people are like, I have to have Chick-fil-A. I have to have Chick-fil-A. They just have to have it. Another good tip when you feel hunger coming on, a lot of times you're dehydrated. And that's something I deal a lot with because I live in a hot climate. You guys living in Canada have no idea what it's like to be in a fucking hot climate where it's 100 degree heat index every day. When you are that hot and you're that dehydrated all the time, you will feel hungry when you're not really hungry. What is really happening is you're actually dehydrated. Your muscle cells basically need that hydration. So what I do is I have a greens powder. I put a scoop of greens powder with some coconut water and a lot of water. I mix that thing up and I drink it. After I drink it, it fills up my stomach. I'm no longer hungry. So that's a tip for me. What I used to do was I used to have some nuts, some seeds, some dried fruit. But that has a shitload of calories in it. And that's something I stopped doing. And after I stopped doing it, I was able to really trim up a lot more. Just a quarter cup of almonds or seeds or dried fruit, you're looking at almost or exceeding 200 calories. It is insane how many calories are in such a little amount of thing. So you really want to be careful, guys, with snacking. Snacking is a killer. One good tip, if you need a snack, instead of chips, get good quality popcorn. 3.5 cups of good quality popcorn is only 120 calories. So you could snack on that 3.5 cups of popcorn. That's only 120 calories. That is not bad at all. So that would be something you can munch on while you're watching TV instead of nuts, seeds, or dried fruit, or chips.
Steve, have you ever weighed out 2 tablespoons of peanut butter or almond butter or anything like that?
Yes, of course, because I used to buy that all the time by the ounce.
It's pretty depressing, hey? 2 tablespoons of peanut butter is not a lot of peanut butter.
Exactly, and that's another thing that I used to, you know, eat a lot of almond butter and peanut butter and stuff, and it's a lot of calories, you know? So you got to be careful.
I purposely will never include peanut butter, almond butter, things like that into my clients' programs because I know that the 2 tablespoons I write is not the 2 tablespoons they're getting. It's more like 4. So if I want them to have almonds, I'll have them have almonds, but I won't ever include almond butter because no one who takes 2 tablespoons of almond butter actually takes 2 tablespoons. It's more like 4. If you weigh it out, it's depressing how little 2 tablespoons of almond butter.
So things with a lot of fat, guys, and things that have a lot of sugar are going to be very calorie dense. So oil, butter, you know, any type of fats like seeds, seeds or nuts or something like that, a lot of fat, they're going to have a lot more calories than you think. So be careful when you're snacking on them. Matt, how about you?
So for me, it kind of depends what your taste is, what you're predisposed to. So if you're a person that typically is going to eat chips, for example, you want the crunchy, salty food, right? So if you switch to something like raw vegetables, you're still getting the crunchy food and you can eat as much of that as you want, right? So that's just going to fill you up. It's going to give you fiber. It's going to give you water. It's all good, right? If you want something that's going to be more salty, then still stick with vegetables, but you can cook them, right? So if you use like a non-stick coconut oil cooking spray, it's going to have almost no calories. You can spray the pan, put in some zucchini, some carrots, some sweet potatoes, salt, pepper, that's all you need, right? And then you got your, and you can eat them over a long period of time. Like when I watch TV, I really only watch sports. That's the only thing I'm interested in. So if I'm going to sit down and watch a baseball game, if I sit the whole time, it might take a few hours, right? So if that's the case, then that's something I'm going to go to. I can have a few handfuls, you know, each hour, and it's not a big deal. It's not going to add up to anything. So water and vegetables are always going to be your best for snacking.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. People always ask, you know, what am I supposed to use in a pan? You know, and that's something, a coconut spray has 0 calories. That's a really good option versus butter or versus oil. And then what you can do in the pan is add spices to it. I like to add all kinds of different spices. Again, very little to no calories in those spices. And then one more tip on your salad. This is a big one, all right? Salad dressing has a shitload of calories. So instead of putting salad dressing, put apple cider on top of it instead. Apple cider vinegar, I'm sorry. Apple cider vinegar, good quality apple cider vinegar. Guess what? 0 calories, apple cider vinegar. That's what I put on my salad with a bunch of spices, and it tastes great. You put dressing, you're getting into the hundreds. You ever see fat people in restaurants at the salad bar? They get like a salad, and then they drench it with a bunch of pasta and salad dressing and shit. They're getting like 600-700 calories from that salad when they should be getting like 20 or 30 calories from their fucking salad because they don't realize how many calories are in those condiments and all that crap that they're putting on it. So you really have to be smart about what you're putting in your body. Just those little fucking changes, getting rid of salad dressing and using apple cider vinegar instead, that could save you like 200-300 calories a day alone. So you really have to be smart about what you're putting in your body.
Okay, I got one more tip and then we'll move into our next question. So another thing is, if you're not an apple cider vinegar fan, I personally like the taste of it, but for some people, they just don't like vinegar. Try fresh lemon juice or fresh lime juice. It's going to really brighten up your salad. And again, you know, the juice of a lime, like an entire lime or an entire lemon, looking at 5 to 10 calories, pretty much negligible. So what I'll do is I'll make like a big salad. You know, I'll have iceberg lettuce. I'll have some carrot slices. I'll have some tomato slices, maybe some celery. You know, even mushrooms really good in salad. It's something a lot of people don't do, but it tastes really good. And then I'll just take a whole lemon. I'll just squeeze that on top and it just brightens it up. And that whole big salad is going to be really filling. It's going to maybe have 50, 60, 70 calories, like negligible amount. Second thing I'll say, and this is something that only when someone's done a bodybuilding competition will they truly understand, pickles. Pickles are a godsend. An entire dill pickle has 5 calories. 5 calories. You can eat that whole jar of pickles and it's like 50 calories. When you're like on the last couple weeks before a bodybuilding show and you're just running on fumes and you want something, you know, salty and crunchy and you know, just, and pickles are kind of even like tangy and a little bit sweet. I would eat like an entire jar of pickles before bed and it would do no harm to fat loss because like that entire jar is like 50 calories. So,
but I mean, is it, you have to get like a good quality one or is it just any pickles? Because I was unaware of that.
Any pickle. Pickle. If you read the ingredients, yeah. Okay, so now there's two types of pickles. There's your regular, you know, dill pickle, and then there's your bread and butter pickle. The bread and butter pickle you want to stay away from because that is sugar added. But if you read the ingredients of dill pickle, all it is vinegar, cucumbers, and salt. That's it.
Yeah. So you don't want to get the pickles from like the fair or something.
No. If it's a dill pickle, it's not going to have any calories. Just stay away from the bread and butter pickles.
Yeah.
The bread and butter pickles are kind of like relish. They have a lot of sugar added. But I mean, if you go to just like your typical grocery store, typical Costco or whatever, they'll have, you know, dill pickles that basically have no calories. Just read the ingredients, look at the calorie facts, and you'll see, you know, it'll say, you know, serving size, 1 medium pickle, and it'll say calories 5. And if you read the ingredients, it's going to say vinegar, salt, dill and cucumbers. That's it.
That's a great advice. Because next time I go, I'm gonna look for that. That's
another thing. Obviously, you wouldn't want to eat a whole jar of them. Is hot pickled peppers. Those have no calories either. So I mean, especially same thing. You know, you could put some of that on, you know, like your chicken breast or in your salad or anything like that. I really like those hot banana peppers, and again, they have no calories. It's just vinegar, salt, water, and then the banana peppers. So our fourth question. He emails me, but he asked for Steve's advice. I don't know how that works. Hey, Trevor, I was hoping you could ask Steve this question for me. I'm doing a very mild cycle. I'm just running 400 milligrams of testosterone per week for 10 weeks. I was wondering, do I need to run a full PCT after this cycle? Thanks for the help. Love the show. So Steve, you can answer this because he obviously
had. Yeah. Listen, 400 milligrams of testosterone a week, that's not a mild cycle. That's enough. That's going to shut you down. That's going to send your LH to near zero within a couple weeks. If you don't believe me, run blood work. You know, so I'm sorry. Yes, you need to run a full PCT. You're on it a long test, an ester testosterone for 10 weeks. That means it's going to be in your system for 15, 16, 17 weeks in total. And it's going to be shutting down your pituitary glands. So yes, you have to run a full PCT. A mini mild cycle, something like if you ran Anavar, you know, for like 4 weeks or something, or like an oral for 3 or 4 weeks, that would be a very short, that would be a very mild cycle. You could get away with running a good quality testosterone booster after that. But you know, anything that you're injecting that has a long ester, guys, it's going to be in your system for a long time. Okay. And the longer you're on exogenous hormones, the longer you will be shut down. I'm sorry to say. And then when you stop injecting it, you got to remember it's got that long half-life. So if you've got a 10-day, 12-day half-life on your long ester cypionate or enanthate ester, you got to multiply that by 4 or 5. So you're talking about a 10-day half-life times 4 or 5 is 40 to 50 days. After your last injection, it's going to be in your system. It's going to be shutting you down. So yes, full PCT is needed. And again, blood work will prove that, you know, so don't be cheap. And, you know, you want to always run a full PCT.
Matt, what are your thoughts on, you know, people saying like, hey, I'm just running an oral only cycle, I don't need a full PCT. You know, you hear guys say stuff like that all the time. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think it's a great question. And I love the fact that this guy asked it, because I could see how you could easily think that it's a mild cycle, right? You have guys on the forums talking about running a gram of test, 600 milligrams of Tren and 500 milligrams Deca and, you know, kickstarting with Anadrol, right? Like, this is the kind of stuff we see. So in a sense, you could see, you know what? Yeah, 400 milligrams is mild compared to what a lot of people run. But the fact of the matter is, the science still remains what it is. And as Steve just mentioned, it's, you are shutting down. If you inject testosterone, even if it's only 200 milligrams a week, you are still telling your body, you know what? I'm giving this testosterone to you. You don't need to make any. Take the day off. And that's exactly how our bodies think. We're lazy. We're programmed to be lazy. If we don't need it, we're not going to make it. There's no reason to expend energy doing that. So you absolutely need a full PCT if you run 400 milligrams testosterone. If you run oral only cycle, I think it's more a duration thing. If you're going to just run one compound for 4 weeks, you could get away with less. I agree with that. If you're going to run a 10-week cycle and you're going to stack, you know, a few things together, I wouldn't recommend that anyways. But if you did that, you'd probably want to run a much heftier PCT like you would an injectable cycle. So guys, always err on the side of caution when it comes to PCT, because the last thing you want to do is shoot yourself in the foot and, you know, have problems recovering. We all see the threads on the forums, and we talk to friends, we talk to guys in the gym. Guys that don't recover have serious problems. You don't want to deal with ED, right? You don't want to deal with feeling like shit all day. It's not, there's no reason for it. If you run a PCT, you're going to have that soft landing. You're not going to have to deal with these things. So always run the PCT. It's in the sticky on the forums. Follow it exactly. We've gone through it in episodes in the past. If you're injecting 400 milligrams test, run the perfect PCT every time.
Some good advice. If you haven't heard of the perfect PCT before, it's basically an in-depth article that explains exactly how to run a post-cycle therapy after your cycle. It explains the science behind every single compound in it. If you want evolutionary.org and you basically go to the forums, you'll find that article. It's basically sticky. Or you can just Google evolutionary.org, perfect PCT, it'll come right up. So our next listener question is a question I absolutely love. Hey, Trev and Steve, longtime listener of the show. I started running some Nutriball from SARMS1.com, and I'm loving the results I'm getting. I'm wondering, is this something that I can use year-round, or does it lose its effectiveness over time? So first off, great question. Nutriball is basically an HGH analog. It basically signals your pituitary gland to increase HGH output. So it's, in an essence, almost the same thing as taking injectable HGH. Nice thing about HGH and Nutriball is that it doesn't suppress testosterone production. It doesn't affect testosterone production in any way. And it also doesn't affect androgen receptors. The problem is if you do, you know, a really aggressive cycle for a long, long period of time, your body basically, your androgen receptors lose sensitivity. It's a defense mechanism of your body. Your body basically goes, whoa, we got way too much androgen hormones floating around in our body. Let's reduce how sensitive our receptors are, because this is way too much. You know, remember that your body's first priority is health. It's not, you know, getting as big and muscular as possible. You know, being big and muscular actually isn't what your body wants, because then if a famine happens, your metabolism is so high, you've got so much muscle to fuel, you're basically going to be, you know, a sitting duck. So that's the nice thing about, you know, Nutriball and HGH, is that it doesn't lose its effectiveness over time. It's actually best to run over long periods. you know, using HGH for a month is basically going to be a waste of money. You know, it's something you want to use at least 3 months. You know, you're going to get your best results 6 months, 9 months, a year. Steve is someone who's been using Nutriball and HGH for quite a while now to increase some of the injuries you're having. Steve, talk about your injuries and how, you know, Nutriball and HGH has helped you and basically what dosage you've been using, things like that.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, once you get in your mid-30s, you know, we were talking about this with both of you guys before the show, but, you know, once you hit the mid-30s, you're going to start noticing your body doesn't recover from injuries the way it used to. Like when you're 25, 30, you can do like the Mike Rashid style of training and just pound the shit out of your shoulders. You can do one day bench press maxing out, then the next day do rows maxing out, and then the next day do bench press maxing out, and then invite, you know, back and forth, and your shoulders don't fuck up. But once you get over 35 and you start doing that, you're gonna blow out your shoulders, just a matter of time. In my case, that's what happened. I was overtraining my shoulders too much, you know, doing those pull-ups, doing dips, doing bench press, doing rows. You blow out your shoulders. It just happens. I've been taking Nutriball since November, off and on. I wish I could afford to take it year round because I would. I'll tell you, taking it really improved my health quite a bit. It really got me going in the right direction. I had so many different injuries. I had a torn rotator cuff that's still torn. That's going to take a while to heal. I've had two degenerative discs. I have two pinched nerves, one in my elbow and one in my neck. And if you've ever had a pinched nerve, you will not be able to sleep when it's really, really bad. So these are serious injuries that do affect your living. Like, it got so bad, I couldn't even walk my dog. So I've made, you know, amazing improvements since then. I also got a stand-up desk. I think that's helped a lot with my neck. I've been doing a lot of stretching. I've been doing a lot of mobility exercises for my rotator cuff. You know, these, all this adds up, guys, as you get older. Nutriball is a really good option, really for any age, but especially if you're over 35. I highly recommend getting Nutriball. It's not expensive, and if you get it from SARMS 1, like Trevor said, it's legit. HGH is something that I've been using for about 2 months now. I added that to my Nutriball stack. And then the thing with HGH is very hard to find, very expensive. So when I stop taking HGH, I will up my Nutriball dosage. I'll be taking Nutriball at 25 milligrams a day instead of 12.5 milligrams a day. So the HGH experience that I've had, it seems to be helping as well with my injuries. It's also been helping lean me out, I think, but I'm not really sure because my diet's been really, really ridiculous. So I do credit my diet more than HGH on that, but it seems to be helping a lot. And, you know, I feel better than I felt since my injuries really peaked. So, you know, definitely going in the right direction, guys, in terms of that. That's something you can't, you know, go to your doctor and be like, hey, I have an injury. You know, these are things that you really have to go on our forums and ask about, so you can find legitimate Nutriball and find legitimate HGH. Just don't buy HGH from some guy at the gym. Don't buy HGH from some website online, because you're going to get screwed. You know, it's a very, very hard thing to find.
Matt, you're getting up there in age. Have you experimented at all with Nutriball, HGH, anything like that?
Not HGH, no, but Nutriball is fantastic. And definitely, to answer his question, you can run it long-term without it losing its effect. That's exactly the best way to run it, to be honest. My main concern with long-term Nutriball use would be that you're using a good source, because I think, like we've said, SARMS 1 we know is good. We have a lot of guys come on with different sources that it turns out it's something else. And if you're going to be using something, especially long-term, you want to know exactly what it is. So that would honestly be my main concern with running something like that long-term. I could definitely use the healing at this age, because you do realize it. For example, we'll get out with a bunch of the hockey families, like my kids are in hockey and everything. And, you know, we'll be running around crazy, and half the men, you know, are talking the same thing. I'm going to feel it tomorrow. And you really do. It really does take a lot longer if you wear yourself out, or if you actually do get an injury, it really can take a lot longer to heal. So I think Nutriball is fantastic, especially as you get older. You can kind of dose it how you see fit. Everybody seems to find a different way. 25 milligrams per day is pretty standard. Like Steve said, he's running 12.5 right now, and that's fine. Some guys dose it in the day, some guys dose it at night, some guys split the dose. It all depends on your side effects if you do get increased hunger and how you deal with that. So if you don't want to be hungry all day, maybe you're the person that takes it at night and you can sleep through it. So it's something you got to play with if you do decide to go with it. But I think it's fantastic. One of the best things out there to use for recovery, for healing, and, you know, just for, like Steve said, feeling great. It's just, it's one of the better things you could try.
So I'm going to say one more thing about Nutriball, and then we'll basically go to our last question, which I actually don't have, is emailed to Steve. So when you take a dosage of Nutriball, it basically raises your IGF-1 levels for 24 hours. So you hear all this stuff about, you know, needing to split up your dosage. You really don't. You only really need to take it once per day. If you want to split up your dosage, you can, but it's not necessarily needed. So, you know, what I would say is if you're doing 25 milligrams a day, which is the recommended dosage, I would then split it up to, you know, maybe before breakfast and before your last meal of the day. If you're just doing 12.5 milligrams per day, I would just dose it once and, you know, either pick before breakfast or before bed. So Steve, I'll let you read off our last listener question. We've got about 10 minutes left to cover it.
Yeah, we have a listener who chimed in. He's like, you guys always talk about relationships and dating, but what about us guys who just want to hook up? We just want to fucking bag chicks, you know? Talk about, you know, this a little bit. And that's true because, you know, we usually talk about relationships. I think all three of us are more guys who like relationships. But when I was younger, you know, and I knew, like, for example, I was moving in 2-3 months, I didn't want a relationship. And a lot of you are in the same situation. Maybe you're in college. Maybe you're about to take a job. You know, you're going to go from Washington, D.C. all the way to California and take a job in 3 or 4 months. So, of course, you don't want a relationship, but you still want to get laid, you know. So here's the thing about hooking up with chicks. It's a lot easier than to hook up with chicks than try to get in a relationship. I can tell you from personal experience. Women out there are fucking horny, okay? They love dick, okay? But the thing is, women don't want to be open about it. They don't want to admit that they're sluts. So the thing is, don't go, like, approach women and be like, hey, do you want to have sex? Because she's probably going to slap you. So here's the thing, what you do. If you're going out to a bar or going out to a club, obviously you want to go out late, 11, you know, midnight. That's when the bars and clubs are buzzing at those types of days. And you want to just, like, approach a girl. If you want to approach a girl, a good thing is to have, like, a guy with you. You know, two guys going up to two girls is much better than one-on-one. But if you are one-on-one or if you're on two-on-two, you're going to approach the women the same way and just go up to her and be like, hey, can I buy you a drink? That's so fucking easy. And if she says yes, buy her a drink and strike up a conversation with her. And then at some point, you know, during the night, just tell her, hey, do you want to come back to my place? I just got a new Blu-ray player. Do you want to watch a movie at my place? Or let's get out of here. This place is too loud. Why don't we go back to my place and, you know, grab, you know, a drink? You know, don't do that. Don't tell her, hey, you want to go back to my place and fuck? Because you're probably going to get a drink on you, okay, or get slapped. So women, you know, are approachable. They want to be approached, but they don't want you to kind of tell them, hey, you know, I'm a slut. Come ask me to have take you home and have sex with. So you got to be smart about it, you know, and she'll get the hint. Women are smarter than guys when it comes to this shit. She's going to get the hint when you ask her to go back to your place to watch a movie on your new Blu-ray disc or whatever. She's going to know what that means. That's code for come to my house and let's have sex. You know, so, you know, that's the way it works, guys. And you know, you have to be smart about the way you approach women. In terms of hooking up and stuff, I highly recommend that every guy spend their 20s hooking up. Because if you don't and you just hop into a relationship or get married at a young age, in 10 years from now, you're going to look back and be like, what am I missing out on? You know, what does pussy taste like? What does pussy feel like? You're not going to know because you've been bagging the same chick for the past 20 years and you're sick of hitting the same pussy for 20 years. She might not be, you know, she might not be the pussy for you. So really when you're in 20s, guys, I mean, I don't want to give a number, but really I think 30, you want to fuck at least 30 women during your 20s. So you can really get a sense of what it's all about. Then when you get in your 30s or 40s, then you can worry about relationships and settling down and stuff. But you're not going to know unless you do it. So get good at it, because when you do get in a relationship and you suck at sex, if you're one of those guys that comes like after like 20 seconds, okay, then you're not, a girl's going to dump you, okay? I'm sorry. So you want to get good at sex. There are ways to improve and, you know, learn how to eat a girl out the right way. Learn how to fuck her the right way, and that will pay off as you get older. What do you guys think?
I'm gonna send this show to your girlfriend and see what she thinks.
She'll agree with me. She'll agree with you.
Yeah, Matt, I'll let you chime in, and then I'll close up the show.
I just wanted to listen to Steve talk for the rest of the show. I thought that was fantastic. That was entertaining. Honestly, like, I've been out of this game for a long time, but I think the key is going to be similar to a relationship, honesty. Because if you go into it and you're not clear about your intentions, like Steve said, you don't have to be that direct, but you need to be clear that, you know, you want to come over tonight at the end of this night. That needs to be the goal. Because if you make it about something else, that's when you see the stories of somebody gets attached when the other one didn't want to, and then it just becomes a big uncomfortable situation. So you know what? Go out there, be honest. What's the worst that's going to happen? She's going to say no, and then you can go on to the next place. If that's all you're looking for, then, you know, it shouldn't be a big deal. Just move on.
Yeah. But I'm curious, Trevor, because you do a lot of the Tinder and that shit, social media. I don't do online dating as much as, you know, your generation does. I'm curious, are you know, Tinder and stuff, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Honestly, Steve, I don't even have Tinder. It's not the type of guy I am. You know, I'm not really into hooking up and stuff like that, but all my friends have Tinder. And, you know, I recommend it for any guy who's, you know, pretty shy. Like, I'm a pretty outgoing guy. Like, I've never had a problem just going up with someone I don't know and, you know, saying like, hey, can I buy you a drink? Or if they're at the university saying like, hey, what are you studying? Like, I've never had a problem just like going up to people I don't know, but a lot of guys are really shy. They struggle with stuff like that. So for them, I'd recommend Tinder. I've never used Tinder, so I can't talk from personal experiences, but all my friends say it's like shooting fish in a barrel. It's basically like as easy as it gets. So basically how Tinder works is, you know, you put up a couple of photos and she puts up a couple of photos. So you basically swipe right if you like her or swipe left if you don't. So if you swipe right and she swipes right, then you guys have a match and you guys can communicate. So, I mean, if, you know, if you download the Tinder app, you see a chick, she seems cute, you both swipe right. What I basically do is, you know, I'd send her a couple of messages back and forth. And then I basically do what Steve recommended is say like, hey, you know, like I just got a new TV. I just set it up. Do you want to come over, you know, Friday or Saturday night and, you know, check it out with me. We can basically turn it on for the first time together. Something like that, you know, something kind of corny, but basically invite her to your place. Cause if you invite her for a cup of coffee, that means I want to get to know you. I want to date you. If you invite her to your place to watch a movie, that basically signals, hey, let's get it on. Yeah. So, I mean, if she says yes, then basically it's pretty much a done deal.
Yeah. So, I mean, in my experience, when it comes to that, women who've been in relationships or marriages and they're coming out of them, they're the ones my age group that want to hook up. They don't want relationships because they just went through a relationship. Their attitude toward relationships are negative. So they really do want to hook up. They just want to taste the dick. They haven't tasted a dick. Their husband hasn't gave them the hammer in years. All right. Married people, you know, don't have sex. You know, a lot of them are in sexless marriages. I'm sorry. Matt, I mean, what do you think? Is that true? I mean, I hope it's not true with you, but
It can be common, right? Like you don't have to be married, right? Like you hear it all the time when you're with somebody forever. So I could definitely see that aspect of it. But you know what? It's true. Like the age that we're both at, if that's what you're looking for, that's probably the prime age. It really is. And you won't know it until you get here, but it's that's yeah. who you see.
I actually met a girl, and I told her, I'm like, look, I'm looking for a relationship. And we were supposed to go out. She actually texted me the night before. She's like, I'm sorry, Steve. You sound like a great guy, but I'm honestly not looking for a relationship. I'm just looking to have sex. She actually texted me this. She was upfront, honest with me. So, I mean, that's what happens. And, you know, and that's the thing. Like, that's why I'm saying, as a guy, don't get into a relationship in your 20s, because you don't want to be in that situation, because her ex-husband probably, you know, was bored with her. So she has, you know, she wants a guy. She wants that passion in her life again in her 30s.
So basically, you know? we're at our hour here to basically answer this listener's question. If you're just looking to hook up, Tinder's great. Go to a bar. You know, even at school, at the gym or anything like that, get a number. But when you get her number and you start texting her, if you say, hey, do you want to go for coffee? You know, do you want to go to the farmer's market? Do you want to go for a walk? Anything like that, that says, hey, I want to date you. If you say, hey, do you want to come over to my place and watch a movie? That says, hey, I basically want to hook up. So basically, that's the main thing. I really, really appreciate all you guys subscribing. We have a huge amount of subscribers on iTunes. Please keep subscribing. Please give us a review. You can also find us on Facebook at Evolutionary Radio, at Evolutionary Radio on Instagram and YouTube. So please give us a like, give us a follow, and give us a review. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for my second co-host, Matt, also known as Masonic Bodybuilder on the evolutionary.org forums, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Thank you.